You know, there is a missing component in between politics and journalism, which is the people. And the people are always supervised and controlled and voter suppressed and hacked at and all this other stuff. And yet we never actually have a voice. I mean, it's been one of the greatest disappointments of blogging, of having participated in the bootstrap of blogging, that in the end, it didn't enable us to become part of the discussion. This was the hope. I mean, you know, the internet's gotten a reputation for just being a place where, you know, terrorists hang out. I mean, that's all they talk about on TV, you know. And the people are like no better. We don't hear each other any better in 2019 than we did 25 years ago, say. This is when I started blogging. It's almost 25 years. And there were periods, there were points in here where I thought we were on the verge of turning this corner. I think the high point probably would be shortly after the election of Barack Obama in 2008. I mean, the need was huge. I mean, the economy had crashed. But on the other hand, we had just elected a black president. And naively, I thought, maybe not so naively, I actually did expect there would be a backlash, that nothing, you know, it was kind of like when the Soviet Union collapsed. Everybody was talking about, you know, the peace dividend and how history had ended and there was a single superpower. And I just didn't believe that. I mean, I'm a baseball fan, a Mets fan, and we have our moments. I mean, there was, you know, 1969 and there was 1986 and there was 2015. And there were a few other years, 2000, the Mets made the World Series, but I don't think of that as one of those years. But most of the time, your team is losing. And you may feel like you've got a sort of sustainable lead. I mean, people think even more. They think they're locked in, you know. I mean, in tech, you don't get locked in. You know, you just, at the moment you think you got everybody beat, the very next day, you get like 24 hours to enjoy it, but the very next day, along comes Netscape. And then where are you then? I mean, you know, it's not a fly that you can swat away. That's, I'm sure, what Bill Gates was hoping. He was hoping that, oh, I can like just get rid of this. I have quotes of him. He wrote me an email and I published it. Said, do you think people are going to buy fewer Encartas? This is a question he asked me. I didn't answer it. But if I were him, I wouldn't have been so sure. I mean, and in fact, as it turned out, you know, ask yourself, what is Encarta? Unless you were alive in 1994, you probably don't know. Unless you were paying attention, I'm paying attention. I mean, if you were a PC user in 1994, you would know what Encarta was. But in 2019, it's called Wikipedia. And it's got a life of its own. And had you come back and told Bill Gates in 1994, well, you know, no, it does mean fewer Encartas. And the thing that it's going to be replaced with is called Wikipedia. And it's something that is created out of, who knows? It's just there. You know, some things are just like that. Wikipedia is one of them. You know, the invention of Wikipedia was not like that. That took some brilliance. That was Ward Cunningham, and then that was the guy who thought that, hey, you know, let's try a wiki. Let's see what happens. I mean, that was a real leap of faith. And the timing had to be right, and the people had to be right. I tried experiments that were, like, I tried to create a hierarchical, open hierarchical a directory, kind of like what Yahoo had. And said, you know, anybody can add an item to this directory. And it's really easy, just, you know, enter a slash separated string of characters, and that's the hierarchy. And yeah, what people did was they vandalized it, and that was it. It was always vandalized. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it had to be the right idea. Maybe that wasn't the right idea. That's never happened, has it? Wikipedia was the right idea, and it worked. I mean, first it was the wiki, and then it was Wikipedia. So, all this has happened. And in the meantime, news has more or less stayed, and politics, have more or less stayed inside of their boxes. And I think that if you want to look at the Trump presidency, if you can call it a presidency, because it's really more a kleptocracy. You know, people talk about it, it's autocratic. I really don't think that's what he's in it for. I think that him and his compatriots, the Russians, are really, and the 1%, and they're, what they really want is they want to transfer the wealth of the United States, which is hugely wealthy, from our bank account to their bank account. So all the rest of this stuff, having us be fighting with each other and killing each other and be armed to the teeth and all that, that may just simply be so that we're more paying attention to that than we are to the real big picture, you know, which is, and maybe the Democrats are part of the whole thing. It's quite possible. Some of their behavior is hard to explain any other way. And certainly, right now, you know, to say the NRA is driving this whole thing, forget it. No fucking way. It's not the NRA. I mean, the NRA is broken. Their scandal, they're, you know, they're completely destroyed at this point. They're not doing the calling. And the gun industry, is it really that big in terms of financial? I mean, you know, it produces a lot of guns, that's for sure. But, you know, Apple produces a lot of iPhones, and I think they're a lot more expensive than guns are. Just saying, I don't know. But as long as we're tearing each other apart, we're not noticing that the wealth is being drawn out of everywhere they can possibly draw it out of, you know. And spending any money at all on the, you know, for the benefit of the people of the United States, that's, from their point of view, that's just wasted money. That's any dollar that's spent doing that really would be better used to just put it into their bank account. That's how cynical this whole thing is, really. So, anyway, with all this transformation, it's really disappointing that news, I guess I have to wonder what the hell is news trying to do here, you know? I mean, they are constantly promoting themselves as being the antidote to being the way you preserve democracy. It's really, you know, sort of an almost altruistic thing that they're doing, you know, helping the rest of us out. But then you have a situation like what happened with Beto O'Rourke, and I was, like many other people, was shocked. But I the question I have after the shock wore off is, why the hell did it take so long for somebody to do this? I mean, turn around, instead of talking to the people on the other side of the camera, just talk to the people that are holding the microphone and ask them, where the hell does that question come from? It's like, you know, there's this great theme in the West Wing TV show. And the theme is, don't accept the premise of the question. And, I mean, you can accept the premise, but you have to think about whether you want to accept the premise of the question. You know, like the question could be is, like, when was the last time you beat your wife? The premise of the question is, you beat your wife. So all we're asking about was, when was the last time you did it? So if you don't actually do that, then, you know, if you answer the question, you're accepting its premise. There is no answer if you don't do it, right? So, you know, the question they ask, I don't remember exactly what it was basically, you know, what can President Trump do to help stop this epidemic of, you know, mass killings using assault weapons? And Beto O'Rourke goes, hello. It's like, what? What? I mean, I don't know. It's like having an arsonist in the fire department. What can the arsonist do to prevent arson? Stop lighting fires. And also, let's get some of these. You know, when they talk about, well, you'll never get the guns out. You know, it's like, we've got so many guns right now, you know, you'll never get them all out. That's another one of these cases where you've accepted a premise that probably isn't true. If you make it illegal to have one of these guns, right, to have this kind of weapon that can kill 90 people a minute or shoot 90 people a minute, whether you kill them or not is a question of what organ you hit. But you can actually hit 90 people a minute or 150 people. I don't know what the action limit is. It's a huge fucking number. There's like no reason for anybody to have one of those weapons. There aren't 100 people you need to hit with a bullet in 1 second or 1 minute or whatever. So if you made it illegal to have one of those things, you probably, there are a lot of law-abiding people out there that have these weapons. And right at that point, they would shrug their shoulders and say, okay, I own something that's illegal. What do I do about it? And of course, there would be a fact that says, if you are a law-abiding person and you want to, this is how you dispose of the gun. You know, you bring it to this place, and at that place, we will, you know, destroy the gun along with all the others. And a certain number of guns will come from that, maybe even a majority of them. All right, so now you got the rest of them out there. Well, anytime you are caught with one of those guns, you go to jail. You know, it's a crime to carry one of those guns, to even own one of those guns. So you force them, you know, you force them to hide the guns and put them in some place where people aren't going to find them. And right there, you're going to save the lives of a lot of kids, probably, because they won't be finding these guns because they'll be very well hidden, or who knows. But you make something illegal, you know. You know, the old stupid line that they say is, well, you know, laws don't stop criminals from doing things. Well, why do we have laws that make it illegal to drive on the wrong side of the road or drive under the influence of alcohol? You know, people do it, right? But we still have the laws. And if they're caught, they will be punished for doing it, you know? And that really does stop people from doing it. You know, it might not happen overnight. We will still have, if we were to ban just outright, no more of these terrible weapons, if we were to ban them, you probably would immediately see a drop in the number of these crimes, but they wouldn't go away. But at least we would be doing something about it. Instead, what we're doing is we're increasing the distribution. Every year, more of them are being sold. That would be another thing, of course, that would stop if they were made illegal. You know, people overlook that, but they keep being sold. There are more of them all the time. If you made them illegal, there wouldn't be any more. Now, this is the kind of discussion that just never happens on TV. For one of the reasons, I mean, you know, since that is where the news is controlled these days, you just never hear discussions like this because you never hear people without conflicts of interest speaking. It's really plain and simple. If you take a step back, you can see it plainly. The politicians all have conflicts of interest. The reporters welcome them. They say, we'll just get the left and the right and let them argue about it. And, you know, by the way, it's true that what they call the left, they really do ground themselves in actual reality, whereas what they call the right is constantly throwing firebombs into that, making it more difficult for us to discuss reality. I mean, that's not because I am of one or the other. I mean, I always say this, but I've voted for Republicans and Democrats in my life. I mean, I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I vote for who I want to vote for. And I make the decision, you know, at the time I make the decision. It's just true, though, obviously. Anyway, so what Beto O'Rourke did shouldn't be unusual. It should be normal. Change the norms, you know? I mean, sometimes we're missing norms and we need to add them. But having reporters accountable to common sense, to what's obvious, to Occam's razor, would improve the quality of news. You know, they're only looking outside of themselves. When they look to figure out what can be made better, they find fault in all kinds of things, but they never find fault in what they do, rarely. And they're only minuscule little details when they do find fault. And they've decided they so do not need oversight that they fired the editor, the fake public editors. When I say fake public editors, I know, okay, fake's not a good word. They aren't real public editors, though, because they aren't members of the public. They are just reporters that they call public editors. It doesn't get you another point of view. They're not even trying to give you another point of view. They're evaluating the work of reporters based on the norms of reporting. And, well, the norms of reporting are that the President of the United States, you can ask questions about the President of the United States, like the one they asked Beto O'Rourke. That's the norm. Well, that doesn't work anymore. Because the norms, because when Trump breaks the norms, the other norms don't work either. You know, what's the difference? Well, Trump has undisclosed relationships between him, his companies, his family, and Russia. They aren't disclosed. We know they exist. They've admitted that they exist. We don't know what they are. He also is the first president in recent history who has not disclosed his tax returns. He also has not divested. So his businesses are all up and running and making money. And he, you think that he has any qualms about making money off of the U.S. government? No. As I said at the outset, that's really what he's doing. He's transferring the wealth from the Treasury of the United States into the bank accounts of other oligarchs and himself. And he's not the smartest one of them, so he's probably not even getting a lot of the money. The money is probably going to people like the like Putin and his Russian oligarchs. The cash is flowing. Now, then they have a tricky problem, okay? Because where do they have the cash flowing? The banks in Russia can't handle the kind of money that is available in the United States. So they do hit some walls here. I mean, they kind of have to keep the United States from falling apart completely. But they would err on the side of more falling apart and more money for them. So we've really got a big corner to turn here. And we need to start the discourse going in a more sane, more realistic direction. You know, if we were all in therapy together, but, you know, on the stories we're telling ourselves about the situation, our therapist would question whether or not we are truly confronting the facts head on, or whether we're only looking out of the side of our eye and trying to pretend that the old world still exists. But he didn't divest, and he didn't disclose. And therefore, if you don't think about that when you analyze his behavior, you're almost certainly missing the point. No, you're certainly missing the point. See, there it is. I'm doing the same thing. At some point, you have to say, there's just so much fact here that it's naive to think that the line that you can draw between the points isn't the reality. So, all right. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.